Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 42, recorded Thursday, July 27th, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: waiting for a good time and paying attention to boarding. This week, coming to you from the San Francisco Airport Marriott, back from my vacation in Sweden and back on the road to California. You know, I got back from Sweden 2 weeks ago, Thursday night, on the 13th actually, and I went into the office the next day, ended up riding the train in with a friend who was on his way out to Australia for a three-week business trip. He asked me where my next destination was. I told him I didn't have one. I didn't have any plane tickets to anywhere. Felt a bit funny in a sort of unnerving sort of way. It was a feeling that quickly went away, though. By the end of the day, I had closed a piece of work that now has me in San Mateo half of every week between now and Labor Day. So I guess I'll be re-upping my United Premier Exec status after all. Quite some contrasts and sights last week. On Tuesday, I was driving through northern Illinois, where the corn is now 6 feet tall and tasseling out. And driving past one of those cornfields is like driving past a green stockade fence. You can't see anything through those rows of corn. Only when you crest an overpass can you see how far the fields go, with the golden tassels beginning to emerge, waving slightly in the breeze. Then on Thursday, I walked out of the Marriott here to cool down after my morning elliptical training session. And I saw the sun rising over the bay, first silhouetting the catwalk that goes out to the nav beacon out in the bay, and then silhouetting an arriving United Airbus 320. You know, those sorts of things reminded me a little bit of why I like to travel. Also, some contrasts in rental cars. Last week, I was loving life in a convertible Ford Mustang. This week, I'm sort of slinking around in a Dodge Grand Caravan minivan. And so I guess that averages out to something like a Ford Taurus, but I'll tell you, the variance around that mean is just sort of whipsawing my image.
O'Hare is nice this time of year. I check my bags and find my seat and buy a beer and settle in. Such is my life here on the road. Now my seat back is up, tray table stowed, and there's nothing to do. I gotta get myself through. So I am shopping in Sky Mall at Five Mile High Mall. It always has just what I need. When I get to the gate and remember too late, I should have brought something to read. I'm okay, 'cause I know that I'm gonna shop Sky Mall.
Following up, the first music clip on today's Travel Commons Podcast is Sky Mall by Jonathan Colton. A couple of listeners pointed me toward this. Greg Lyle sent me a note at comments@travelcommons.com. And Leonard, no last name, posted a link to Jonathan's song in his comment to Travel Commons number 41. He said, I heard this song on Jonathan's Thing of Week podcast and couldn't help but thinking of the recent episode with facts about Sky Mall. Here's another verse.
I bought a pair of bonsai trees. I bought a big fake rock where I can hide my keys from everyone. Sway to my favorite songs, my favorite holiday songs, and I am shopping in Sky Mall.
So if you want to listen to the whole song, I've replicated Leonard's and Greg's link in this episode show notes. Marco left a comment about the last episode's story, talking your way out of the quadruple S secondary search mark on your boarding pass. When I fly in the U.S., I rarely get a boarding pass without the dreaded SSSS on it, Marco says. I assume this is because I'm usually either on a one-way or a convoluted multi-segment ticket often bought from a dodgy third-world country. Hey, what can I say? I like a deal when I see one. Anyway, my reaction's usually a bit different from your friend Mike's. Secondary screening itself only takes a minute, and I have learned that I can often skip the long lines to the regular screening by pointing out the quadruple S to the gatekeeper. I'm sure the secondary screening has been a net time saver for me on multiple occasions. You know, in Travel Commons number 41, we talked also about how packed planes are breaking down common travel courtesies. And that the biggest breakdown being around carry-on luggage, Ed Vauder of the Searching the Internet podcast left this story on the website. I saw people take out luggage in the overhead without asking anyone, move it 4 or 5 rows toward the back of the plane so that they can place their bag in the bin above their seat. This created a major incident since the person whose bag was moved had to make a tight connection upon landing, and he noticed what was happening. It escalated to the point that the flight attendant had to intervene and place the person's bag with the tight connection in the closet in the front of the plane. With planes packed as they are, it's almost certain to lead to more air rage during the busy summer travel season. Yeah, and won't that set a fine example for kids watching their parents get into a screaming match over the placement of the Barbie rolling bag? Well, I'll tell you, the Chicago Tribune editorial board, of all people, weighed in the week before last with the, you know, the typical sort of, well, just check all the baggage solution that's often spouted by non-frequent travelers. I'll tell you, obviously these guys haven't checked a bag recently. Cutbacks in ticket counter staff typically mean a 20 to 30 minute wait to check a bag, or cut that in half if you feel like paying the SkyCap a $2 a bag fee, if you can find a SkyCap. Cutbacks in the ramp staff mean it can take another 30 to 40 minutes at the back end for a check bag to burp out onto the carousel. You know, add more people to this. You know, as it is, you often spend more time in front of the carousel after a Detroit to Chicago flight than you do in the air. Fix these problems, and the airlines and the Tribune editorial board might be surprised to find that people will willingly check their bags, when it doesn't add another hour to their travels. Finally, Alan Marco sent me a note about the new clock radio that Hilton is putting in their hotels. They have a wire coming out the back. Plug it into the headphone jack of your MP3 player. Hit the big MP3 button, they're appropriately labeled, on the top of the radio, and voila! You're listening to Travel Commons while you brush your teeth in the morning. No need for the iTrip trick that I mentioned many Travel Commons episodes back. You know, I'll tell you, I've used these MP3 radios in the Memphis Hilton and in a Marriott somewhere, I can't quite remember where, and they work, actually they work very well. I've also noticed that some cars have auxiliary jacks in that storage compartment in the front center armrest. Plug your iPod in and it pumps through the radio without any of the interference that you get sometimes with an iTrip. My new Saab has this, and also the Ford Mustang convertible from last week that Avis so thoughtfully provided and made my week last week. It had the same jack, so I'm going to have to start carrying the cord, then I'm going to need to take advantage of that. Hey, well, thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories, the voice of the traveler, the email address, comments@travelcommons.com, or you can easily post them on our website at travelcommons.com.
So I was in my car, I wasn't going that far. 10 miles in the sun, things were going my way. It was a brand new day that had just begun. Heard a love song, I couldn't go wrong. It was all about window down.
first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is waiting for a good time. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I got back the week before last from the accidental vacation to Sweden that I discussed in Travel Commons number 38 and again in number 41. The family and I went over to pick up my new Saab 9-3 convertible. We had a good time, so a good bit of the country ended up putting 900 miles on that car in 5 days. That was a lot of Sweden. My wife put it perfectly, though, when she said, "This was a perfect vacation, except for the flights at the beginning and the end." I can't remember if she said this while a couple of Somali kids were kicking the back of her seat, or when we were trying to thread our way through an amazingly packed Heathrow for our flight for JFK, or while we were waiting on the ground at LaGuardia for an hour, number 20-something for departure. You know, 5 to 10 years ago, when people found out how much I traveled, they'd be envious. How exciting to visit all those places. Now, they're sympathetic. Jeez, what a pain that must be. You know, the first day of our vacation arriving in Heathrow from Chicago was a morning of lines. We were just transiting through to Stockholm, but the weather and crowds conspired to make it as sticky as possible. The first line was just waiting to land. We had gotten into London airspace about a half hour early, but then burned that up in a holding pattern. The 777's flight tracking map looked like some kid had attacked it with a red crayon, making circles, making gobs of circles by the time we landed. And then, of course, the fun continued on the ground. The bad weather meant that departing flights were delayed, leaving us without a gate. Another 15-minute wait, and then eventually they found another gate. I don't know, maybe they kicked somebody else out. However, once on the gate, we still couldn't get off the plane. Apparently, some passengers sometime that night had had a bit of an altercation with a flight attendant. So now we all had to wait for the police to come on board and escort off a visibly shaking older man. I mean, how dangerous could this guy be? There were still even more lines, though now they're called queues, because now we're officially in the UK. First, we had to wait on the bus. First, we had to wait to get on a bus from Terminal 3, where American landed, to Terminals 1 and 2, where we were to pick up our connecting BA flight to Stockholm. And after our little ride past a bunch of parked planes, and, you know, our own private tour of the bowels of Heathrow, it was time to queue back up for security. Now, this puzzled me a bit, since we hadn't gone outside security, but here we were, ready to take another go. Now, this line was tailing back so far that security was actually holding people in a second queue, releasing them in batches into the main queue. So we really had a line to stand in line. 20 minutes later, after a good bit of jostling with rude and frustrated travelers, we were through. The only good thing was that I didn't have to take my shoes off. I asked the guy loading the bags into the x-ray machine about shoes. He said, no, keep them on, he told me. Though he did say that he wouldn't be surprised if they started that foolishness. He said they just seemed to be following the TSA's lead more and more there in Heathrow. I did, however, get a nice full body pat down after walking through the metal detector, even though I didn't set it off. And actually, though, I found that, quite honestly, less annoying and certainly less time-consuming than the shoe carnival in the U.S. Dealing with all this on a couple hours sleep, we flew coach, so no lay-down seats for us, made this first day of vacation something to be endured rather than enjoyed. Sitting in a Terminal 3 pub with a pint at noon, and I'm not quite sure whether I didn't quite, maybe I didn't quite make noon, maybe I just let it go at 11:30. But I was watching the kids while my wife chose her stress relief, that being shopping. So sitting there, I looked up and they had a flight departure board in the pub, and I saw, as I'm sitting there, I see what pops up. BA posts a 30-minute delay on our flight to Stockholm. Now, I will tell you that this was one delay that didn't cause me too much bother, though. I just got up and ordered another pint. Here we are, you and me. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is paying attention to boarding. AirTran, U.S. Airways, and Midwest Airlines all reported profits today, making it now 8-for-8 on domestic airlines reporting profitable second quarters. This in spite of fuel prices that seem to be hitting new records every week. An article in this morning's USA Today said that U.S. airfares in the first quarter of this year were 10% higher than last year. Airlines are pointing to oil costs, with crude oil up more than 20% this year as their justification. And, you know, I think that most flyers understand that. They don't like it, but, you know what, they see price increases every day at the gas pump. However, the profit reports rolling in suggests that the airlines are figuring out how to make money in this environment. And I think operating at over 80% seating capacity doesn't hurt either. However, most of my recent mail has not been around fare changes, but it's been around changes in getting on the plane. Way back in Travel Commons number 21, which was last November, I reported on how research from an industrial engineer at Arizona State University led America West to chuck their standard rear to front seating for something a bit more complex. Rear window seats first, then in order, rear middle and front window, most of the front middle, rear aisle, and then the remaining front middle, front aisle. Try saying that three times fast. And United moved to a bit of a simpler variant of that, which they called Wilma, boarding grouped by windows, middle, and aisle seats. 8 months later, America West says they've reduced boarding time 2 to 5 minutes, and United claims savings of 4 to 5. But so why then did Northwest go in the complete opposite direction last month, doing away with boarding groups in their entirety and just letting everyone go on when they want to? So they call it random boarding. You know, some might call it scrum boarding. They say their tests showed that this random boarding process shaved 5 to 10 minutes off their boarding time. What gives here? Actually, it kind of reminds you of the old story in industrial psychology, when Max Weber ran this experiment in a GE plant where production went up whenever he turned the lights brighter, but then the production continued to go up when he made the lights dimmer. And so, you know, really the finding there wasn't the fact that the brightness of the light didn't matter as much as the fact that it changed. The workers produced more when they felt that someone was paying attention to them. Is that what's going on here? It's not that one method is better than the other. It's just the change. It's the fact that airlines are paying more attention to the boarding process that's making it better. I don't know, but, you know, of course, all this blinding science, and by the way, some comp sci professor in Ben-Gurion University in Israel did some geometric proof that ended up proving the original Arizona State University research correct. So now we're in the full propeller spin now. But like I said, all this blinding science goes completely out the window when you bring in the fact that those precious metal frequent flyers, the gold, platinum, and the status guys, weigh in. Because no matter what boarding scheme they use, those guys end up boarding first. And on many flights, especially sort of the big trunk routes, O'Hare to LaGuardia, between San Francisco and LAX, those status frequent flyer can be most of the plane. I mean, I was on a flight from Cleveland to Chicago once when at boarding time, the gate agent announced, everyone on this flight has status. So, okay, we're still going to do a pre-boarding, or it could be just a boarding, given that everybody is eligible for pre-boarding, but we'll do a pre-boarding. But we're going to do it by row numbers, and then proceeded to call out rows from the back to the front, completely ignoring the highly publicized, scientifically designed boarding process recently implemented by that airline. I'll tell you, though, I think rather than investing a bunch of money and shaving a couple of minutes off the boarding time, how about investing some of these profits that have just been reported today in making the hours we spend on the plane more enjoyable? You know, add an extra flight attendant to a fully booked plane, Or how about another ticket agent to cut down check-in lines? Or just maybe a small snack on that 4-hour flight to the West Coast that I paid $600 for this week? Something to make the plane rides just a bit more tolerable, rather than, as my wife mentioned in the first topic, miserable bookends to an otherwise enjoyable trip. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 42. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is from the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. You'll find the song titles, artists, and links to the artist website in the show notes at travelcommons.com. And if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, moans, groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or MP3 file to comments@travelcommons.com or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks always to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, audio file, or post comments on the website. Until next time, and I don't think, given that I don't have any big vacation planned now in the future, not going out of the country, just working for a living, won't be so long between till podcast number 43 shows up. But until then, take care. Thanks for joining us at the Travel Commons.
On the road, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind. The warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying